you of what you think for you a trauma-informed justice process would look like in practical terms, from like the moment of report to trial outcome.
I mean, and luckily there has been a big scoping on this, but I think first of all people need to understand the impact of trauma, delayed trauma, trauma from people involved in incidents. Like you're saying, you're talking about like they call it almost third trauma or vicarious trauma. So people, even like barristers, for example, can be victims of vicarious trauma. So that's where you've worked with all these people and then it starts to affect you. So really seeing it in the space of what trauma does to people and what triggers, real triggers, different spaces. And just I think that the challenges for me thinking on that and the loop is that you would just need such an infrastructure shift, a huge capital investment to really move things forward, to be trauma-informed, just in terms of even spaces. You know, because in the court, every court you go to, apart from a couple of ones, right, you go and it's just clinical. If it's clinical, right, if you've had a sexual assault, been to a sexual assault and to get evidence, for example, it's clinical. Everything's clinical. So if you're trauma, you're going to be traumatized. So I just think really it needs to just understand trauma and also just, I think it's a difficult space and desensitization happens to people. But it's remembering that for these people, this is the first time they've been in the system. Now, they, you may work with 10 people, they don't, but let's say you work with 10 people a day. So you don't, you lose it, that maybe the empathy or the sensitivity or whatever, you're busy, you're stressed. But this is their first experience of that. It's so, I don't know. I think infrastructure does need to shift. It's a long-term process, but I don't know. I mean, I just don't think it's fit for purpose, like you've identified a lot of it. So for me to even have a trauma-informed cycle would need more, just a lot of, infrastructure change, really.
Yeah.
But there have been some improvements, you know, with like, for example, independent sexual violence advisors, helping support, but therefore they get frustrated as well. You know, even like you have witness supports, volunteers are amazing, but that really shouldn't be their space to volunteer to this sort of space. It's crazy.
Yeah. And I think like you was talking about how clinical it can feel, and that I have found out whilst being over here, and there's similar stuff happening in England, but to a different kind of level. But they're looking at kind of forensic evidence collection and how invasive and traumatizing that process is for survivors as well. And that's sort of like the starting point of a justice process in these kind of cases. And that there's a development of a kit that has, I think they're starting to roll it out now. It's called a self-collecting DNA kit, but it's essentially a kit that you get sort of a trained professional to do a swab for you, but it's not in a hospital, it's more in kind of like community centers almost. And it's a lot less invasive and traumatizing for the survivor. And I was thinking, that's happening over here. I don't know much of what's happening in England except from what's happening in Bristol with the Enough organization, but that's a whole different kind of avenue, because the one over here is they've got trained professionals, you're not doing it yourself, they store it so it can be used in the justice system, whereas I believe with the Enough organization in Bristol it is very much you swab yourself, and it probably will not hold up in court because of contamination issues and it not being done in a clinical environment and things. But it's like, exactly. I never thought about that aspect of the justice system when looking at how it's not fit for purpose for these cases, and the whole level of invasive nature that it goes into being able to have the forensic DNA evidence to then feel like, okay, I have some quote concrete evidence for court. And then if you get to that process for then you not even to be convicted after all of that as well, that you've basically just been going through, right, so I've re-traumatized myself multiple times to not even get the justice I deserved.
I know. And it is this, and actually, you've reminded me of, there was something else which was a positive initiative about 10 years ago. It's called the Sapphire Units.
Okay.
And they were the police were funded. They had specific rape units, and the Sapphire Units were quite progressive and were doing some really good matching up in the justice system. But then they got decommissioned largely.
Oh.
Different areas. So yeah. It's about consistency as well. And I think the other challenge is, if you think about political side of it, right, you're in power for 4 years. So commitment to long-term projects is always on a cycle. So actually, for example, in the UK, we had Dominic Raab, who was our Conservative, worked in the government on some of these projects, for example, was trying to move some things forward. He gets out. Then it's up to the next government what they take forward. They change policy. By the time they've changed policy and got things in, it's 2 years in. Then it got a ramp up. So it's also political systems make it a challenge. So the more cross-functional party working you can get is always a real positive, I think, as well, for like thinking, okay, well, can we commit to this for 10 years or something? So it is a real challenge. Even like now in the UK as well, you have like police crime commissioners who would often fund, they fund the ISFA services, they fund a lot of the wraparound services. Some of those people are getting decommissioned. It's not politically in favour, perhaps, to always have PCC. So you've but this patchy kind of process is not trauma-informed, because it's, we'll give you a service, we'll put it away. Or it's wanting outcomes too quickly. So in any level of funding you do, so for example, even for our charity, we're very lucky, we have very progressive funders. However, there comes a point where people always want to know, well, what are the outcomes and the measurements of your work? You know, if you were to do something, say, for the National Lottery project, everything has to be in quantitative, right? So by the end of quarter one, we have helped 15 people to move on by 10% or 20%, right? But it's not that simple to quantify. So that's the other challenge that you face in this.
Mm.
It's sometimes the outcomes are too rushed.
Yeah.
You can't change things overnight. But anyway, that's a whole different conversation, I suppose. But it is all imperative around looking at it. And that's why I suppose we really, because it's such a big scope, and that's why the focus for us, we've at this moment in time, obviously looking around that, Barris are legal professionals, but the ideal would be long term to do countries, do like best practice in different countries as well, and learn from each other. Where we wouldn't be able to do that, however, probably is in America.
Yeah.
So because their justice system is so adversarial and so commercial, it's like, that's the other thing. At least in England, we have some form of framework and capping. You know, if there were defence barristers in rape cases being getting £1 million a case, it would be worse. You might just imagine what it would be like. And then you have this weakened, poor state. It would just be awful. So, you know, at least in England, we do have that. And fundamentally, there is always... most people go into it wanting to make a difference in some way. It's just realising what the way is for justice.
Yeah.
No? So, yeah, it's an interesting space.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to finish up with one last question, because we have been going for quite a while.
I'd say we could chat for hours. It's terrible.
No, it's absolutely fine. I've really enjoyed this conversation. It's been very interesting for me. But what has been the most rewarding and also the most difficult part of your journey so far in this area?
Yeah, I definitely think the most rewarding has been the creation of the educational modules, to have that validity of it being accepted, you know, and having barristers be open enough to actually know that they can say this. If they think there's weaknesses or bias in the system, say it.
Mm-hmm.
Just say it. It's very validating for complainants as well, victim survivors, very validating. So that's been huge for me. Seeing that come to fruition has probably been the best thing. The most challenging is always the experiences of the complainants and the letters. And you can literally, in every line you read, you can feel the pain. You really can. Just learning more about living with long-term consequences and seeing that is really difficult. Because, you know, you can't fix it. You can't.
Yeah.
And also, you know, also the hard challenge as well is knowing some of the cases and some of the people who get acquitted. And you just think, well, like, is that? It's frightening. It's frightening in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be honest, it's frightening at times. And, you know, anyone who can go into a dark space, this is a dark space. So luckily I learned from my first experience working in this space in my 20s just how much it can take from you. So even now, the work we do, when we work with even students, we talk a lot about self-care, vicarious trauma, strategies, because if you're going to go into this space, there's a price to pay.
Mm-hmm.
Without a doubt. You know, psychologically, there's always a price to pay. And that goes for everybody in this space, all the, you know, legal professionals as well. So, yeah, I think that's a hard thing.
Yeah.
It's the hardest thing for me. Really, the letters. Like, I had one last week, and it was just like, visceral, almost. The pain of it is visceral. So yeah, that, but then you just, you know, you have to decompartmentalize, you have to put in boundaries in place and strategies, and also just know, like for me, for example, I know, you know, you can't change a massive system. You can't. You can make maybe indents, you can make other recommendations, you can do some change, you can do some feedback, you can get things going, you can start like what I call mobilization. But will you ever get full execution of what you're plans and mobilize, we're mobilizing? That's such a higher level of decision making, which unless you're very much in that community and accepted, you don't have that influence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard, you know. For example, I have to use sometimes a chain of people for influence. So people have gone, it's awful, but sometimes certain universities, certain law schools, you don't get credibility unless you're aligned to people who are aligned to the decision makers.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's also quite difficult at times.
Yeah, I think that's such a common thing now, in that it's this idea of it's the people you know is how you're getting change. Not really as much of how important that change is or how that change would better so many people's lives. It's, you've got to get the people, you've got to have the connections. And you can see it also in like the employment sector for young people now. Because everyone is coming out with very similar qualifications, very similar grades. It's turning into, oh, it's the people that you know. If you know people in that sector that can get you an in for an interview or something like that, which is a whole other issue.
But it actually, you know, it does speak to the very heart of things, though.
Mm.
The levels of injustice by the level of networks.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, structural inequality is what we're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Opportunities. So yeah, we could speak on that another time if you want.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for
it's been a privilege.
Yeah, for having this discussion with me.
Oh no, thank you for letting me obviously share perspectives. It's really a privilege. Yeah.
I'm Justine Willis-Toms, host of New Dimensions, heard Sundays from 9 to 10 a.m. on CJSF 90.1 FM. As you know, we are living in both challenging and exciting times, prompting more people to seek new solutions and to engage life more fully. New Dimensions explores vital topics with some of the world's leading thinkers, from science and religion to politics and medicine. Join me on Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. and together we'll explore New Dimensions on CJSF 90.1 FM, the station that is diverse, independent, and yours.
Welcome back to Intravenous here on CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby Campus and Community Radio from Simon Fraser University. And we just heard part two to my discussion with Leonie, who is the CEO of the registered charity in England, Justice Is Now, talking about a whole bunch of different aspects, to be honest, of rape and serious sexual offences in the justice system, and looking at delayed trauma, judge-only trials, risk mitigation strategies, challenges that she's experienced, and things like that. If you missed out on part one, it is on the Intravenous playlist on the website cjsf.ci. I would strongly recommend taking a listen, and I want to thank Leonie again for taking the time to have that discussion with me. It was very interesting for me, and I hope it was very interesting for you listening, to look at the kind of areas in which the justice system is failing survivors of sexual violence and to look at where proposed solutions are coming into place and starting to be trialed. Now, we're coming up to the end of the hour in which Democracy Now! Will be taking over from 11 a.m. So because this was such a heavy topic, I'm going to probably be playing, I would say, about two songs to finish up, maybe three, just so it ends on a bit of a lighter note. I would like to say I would recommend tuning in for all Intravenous episodes, but especially in the coming weeks as I have further interviews going into different areas in this topic. Like I said at the start of this morning's episode, I have an interview with my professor from my university back in England, Dr. Dominic Wilmot, talking specifically about rape myths and jury decision making and his views on some of the potential solutions to that issue. So that will be airing next week and the week after. It's going to be in two parts. And then I also have a panel discussion with Chloe, Jacqueline and Patty, who are all from three different organizations, but collaborating on research together from 2023. And they've just finished it up and are releasing some of the preliminary results in the coming months, looking at the accessibility crisis in Northern BC, Northern Ontario and the Yukon in regard to sexual evidence, sexual assault evidence kits. And their research is very interesting because they took a very strong Indigenous approach with it, because most of the people that are affected are Indigenous women and girls. But they really took a collaboration and partnerships with Indigenous groups across those areas. So the research has been very interesting, and it was a very interesting discussion, and being able to talk to all three of them as well about it and get their different opinions on their different roles and what went into it. So I would strongly recommend tuning in for the next couple of weeks, but also just tuning into Intravenous every Wednesday anyway. So yeah, I am going to play a couple of songs now to finish up. These were recommended to me by our music coordinator here at the station, Connor, and I really enjoyed them, so I'm going to play them for you. We've got, starting up, Runaway by Yukimi off of her album For You, and it's a bit of a soul R&B song. And then after that, I'm going to play the song Welcome Back to Me by Cumulus, off of the album We've Got It All. And then if I have time, I will play another song called Name Your Price by Maddie J off of her album I Can Change Your Mind, which is a bit of alternative rock. So yeah, we'll start off with Runaway by Yukimi. Thank you.
before.
No taste, no rush, no place. My thoughts wander and they run away, run away, run away. Run away, run away. As I try to hide, you always find me planning.
Jamie Hill. I'm the Design and Communications Manager at Embark Sustainability. I think my favorite thing about Embark is that you do not have to be the climate know-it-all. You don't have to know everything about the issues that are going on. You really just need the passion to get started. So depending on what you're interested in, you might have a unique skill or interest that you don't think is applicable to climate at all, and it turns out you are the people that we need to be part of the community. So I'd really encourage anybody who has even an inkling of interest in climate or food justice to get on board. Embark Sustainability Society is an independent, student-centered nonprofit working across SFU campuses. Embark focuses on climate and food justice in their programs and initiatives. Some of their ongoing work includes their food rescue program, learning gardens, and sustainability career nights. Discover your role in building a sustainable future based on your unique skills and interests. Learn more at embarksustainability.org and follow along on Instagram at embarksustain.
And welcome back to Intravenous here on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby Campus and Community Radio from Simon Fraser University. The songs we just heard were Welcome Back to Me by Cumulus off of the album We've Got It All, and then before that it was Runaway by Yukimi off of the album For You. And I'm just gonna say my goodbyes before I hand over to Democracy Now at 11 a.m, and that we have one last song to play, which will be Name Your Price by Maddie J off of the album I Can Change Your Mind. And I hope you have a good rest of your day and that you enjoyed this morning's episode of Intravenous, which was a part two interview with the Oni from the charity Justice Is Now.
Stay.